Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Tea Time, the podcast. And in this episode, I finally brought on the expert, a therapist, to, you know, help you all get your lives together. Like, and I mean, this is not just me talking to you, but this is me talking to myself, because you know how passionate, well, if you've been rocking with me for a while, you would know. And if not, I'm telling you now, I believe in taking action, but I also believe in knowing yourself, knowing when to take a break, knowing when you need to take care of you and fill your cup, and how important mental health is, and especially during, you know, this pandemic. You know, people joke and see, you know, this panoramic and all sorts of things. You know, during these times, like, it's so super important to really take care of ourselves. And I feel like as entrepreneurs, we really don't, it could really get toxic at times, especially online space. You know, we already know without entrepreneurship, social media can really, you know, bring on all sorts of toxic emotions and the narratives online. And I really feel like there is a need for these types of conversations around mental wellness. Notice I'm going to be saying mental wellness, because mental health has this type of like taboo attached to it. And can we just, you know, shift the perspective and just look at it as mental wellness, the same way we like to take care of ourselves and, you know, look our best, feel our best, you know, exercise. You know, you also have to give that same attention to your mind, right? We hear so many tips, so much, you know, mindset, this mindset, that, as it relates to entrepreneurship, but guarding your mental wellness is also very detrimental to having a really good mindset, because your business is truly going to be better for it. And instead of me talking about it by myself all the time, ever so often in my content, I was really excited to be able to bring on the expert, a therapist, because I really feel, especially as entrepreneurs, we need that, and specifically creative entrepreneurs. Like, if you're a creative entrepreneur, or even if you're not a creative entrepreneur, do yourself and your business some good and listen to this entire episode or series, because I may just split it up into two episodes so that it's more digestible. So yeah, I'm not going to make this episode any longer. I have Neola Zama, a therapist. I'll link all of her details in the show notes below. If you feel like you want to book a discovery call with her by the end of this episode, I highly encourage it. And even if it's not with her, you know, just definitely take care of your mental health. So without any further delay, let's dive in to this week's episode. Welcome to Tea Time, the podcast. I am Cassie Marina, fondly known as the Branding Queen, and I am a digital branding strategist and coach, helping businesses get online and thrive doing so. I am passionate about sharing my knowledge through content creation like this podcast, online trainings, and VIP intensive experiences. Think of this podcast as the place to get the latest advice, strategies, tips, news, and inspiration on building your brand online, using the tools available to us, but most importantly, through thought-provoking content to improve your mindset, to maximize on these tools, and to put context to day-to-day developments in the online world of business, with a little bit of tea dishing facts and sass, because I really want you to thrive. Now let's dive in into today's episode.
Hey
Niola, thank you for joining me for today's episode. This one I have been really looking forward to. You know, it's really super important to touch on mental health. It's an important aspect of my brand and, you know, what my brand stands for and my values and all of these things. Like, I'm an entrepreneur that in my content, part of my messaging is really like also mental health. Like, I talk a lot about like the go. You have to take action. You have to do all of these things, but I also believe in grace. So it's like a balance of both. And I'm just so excited to have you here today. So I would allow you to basically introduce yourself. And what's your experience as it pertains or relates to entrepreneurs? Like, just give us a background of your career and stuff like that. How you even got into becoming a therapist?
Well, I knew that I wanted to dedicate my life to helping people when I was 12 years old, because someone asked me very directly, someone who I would say was an authority, said, Niola, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, I wanted to help people. And I was always very interested in human behavior. My intuition was always very strong. I actually thought it was normal to go through the world sensing the shifts in mood in people and any environment I was in. I've since learned that's just being an empath, which is both a superpower and probably a thorn in my side sometimes, but we'll get to that a little later. And I thought that my personality, my gifts, in addition to the trauma that I've survived, lent very well to a career in psychology. And so I thought that I could marry my dream, my passion and purpose with my career. And so the therapist was born. I've been practicing for almost 20 years. I've practiced widely. So I've done lecturing at the bachelor's level for teachers. I've trained military, paramilitary, and other students in suicide intervention. I've worked in EAPs, I've worked in UE, I've done coaching for management level go up. And in my private practice, the reason I see women only is because in my experience as a trauma survivor, not many people speak my language and they don't understand my story. As a woman who's survived trauma, abuse, a woman who's survived lots of sexual harassment in every single job I've ever worked at. I'm a woman who has thrived and healed, and I continue to grow from mental illness. And women, we speak each other's language, and there's something about a female story that only another female understands deep inside. So I'm not bashing, you know, women receiving counseling from male therapists. However, I have found my work to lend itself more to wild success with other women. Also, the context of our country, we know what's happening. I don't have to go into it.
Right.
Women need safe spaces. We need places where our unique story can be heard and respected and validated. And that's what I'm here to do, create safe space for women with my therapy and my coaching.
In context with like entrepreneurship, like this is part of like why we're having this conversation, where the context is entrepreneurship and specifically women, because as a brand strategist and coach, like my ideal or target market has always tend to be women. Like at first I didn't even realize it, and that was very early in my career when I first went self-employed as a designer. I just thought, oh yeah, I'm just out here making business cards and logos for any business, you know?
Right.
And it wasn't until a friend said, hey, you know, your target is women. You know, you should be on Pinterest because women are Pinterest. And I was like,
Like,
but woman. Yeah, I was like, I didn't even notice I was mainly serving women because that's just who I resonated with, connected with. I enjoyed working with But I didn't really look at gender at that point in time. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, that's actually right. And now I'm like so like unapologetic about it, because it's like I know that's my ideal, but I never approached it from the perspective of like, no, I'm not accepting any men. You know, I still like would have the conversation, and if it's a right fit, I'll work with them. But in the past, yeah, I just found that nope, I shouldn't. So first, let's address the myth of mental health, right? And this is something that really is a peeve of mine, and why I'm so passionate about mental health is that there's so much emphasis, you know, you would find when it comes to like finding insurance, it's all geared. Why? Why is someone calling me?
No.
Okay. Let me reel it back in.
You don't include these in those bloopers, though. I find it so relatable and kind of sweet.
All right. I won't edit it out because I can't remember where I left off. And
we're circling back to the...
Let's circle back. So you would find that when you start a career, you know, you think about insurance, and the insurance is around... you know, dying, death, what are the benefits from a health plan? Nobody talks about mental health in the workplace, much less entrepreneurship. Like, we just don't consider mental health on any level. And the thing is, we understand we can't logistically show up for work if our hand is broken, if we even have as simple as a cold, or we're in the hospital. But what about the mental aspect? You know, we have emotional well-being, you know, and it's like, you're supposed to just like suck it up. And to me, that's like very toxic, you know?
It's very toxic. And look how quickly we would get sick leave or leave from a surgeon if we had to have, you know, treatment for broken leg or broken back. But how comfortable do we feel if we're working for someone else to call in and say, well, I'm taking 2 days for my mental health? You know, and we feel uncomfortable because what would they think?
I laugh because, you know, I laugh because the response would be, what are you talking about mental health? Yeah, listen, you need to get in the office.
Yeah, right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the trouble is not just local. It's
of course,
worldwide.
Yeah.
So if you study abnormal psychology and it tells you about the history of treating mental illness, people who are mentally ill were thought to be demon possessed or possessed by the spirit of animals or practicing witchcraft. And so they would be.
So that's where it comes from. It comes from that history.
Yes. And we call it the dark ages of psychology. People would be chained to walls and be hosed down freezing water to get those demons out of them. We'd have really inhumane, you know, frontal lobotomies, making all kinds of mistakes, people ending up crippled. And certainly this has passed down through the ages, and we still have a very superstitious culture. So we've adopted those beliefs wholesale. We don't even talk about feelings with children. It's all about passing SE exam, getting, you know, all of your passes, and you have to work in a prestigious field. Don't cry or talk about feelings. So
that's a whole other topic. Like we could do a whole episode around that, because I was just talking to another mom about this whole online school and the way that they've approached this, and you see kids developing anxiety, depression, they've become very withdrawn. So my next thing I wanted to touch on, which really what started this whole conversation, is mental health and being intentional as it relates to entrepreneurs, especially creative entrepreneurs. Like I could, as a background with graphic design and creating something, photographers, you know, these are the fields in entrepreneurship where we are easily... I think we're vulnerable to be taken advantage of, because people just think it's not that it's okay, but it just seems least valued, as opposed to just like the education system. There are certain things that seem more valuable than others. So you don't go to the doctor and take advantage of them and ask them for a discount, or you don't tell them, hey, see me first, and depending on if I like your diagnosis, I'll pay the bill. Like, that's insane. But yet we feel we can do this to creators. Well, I need to see first before I decide if I'm going to pay. Or we've gotten a little more comfortable where we're not designing or creating or coming to your shoot to do any content or create anything. You need a deposit. But then people still have this spec work mindset. Spec work means look and see if we like, and then we decide if we pay, right? So you might have paid the deposit, and then, well, I'm not really totally satisfied. I don't really like what was produced, so I don't feel like I need to pay the balance, which is also wrong, because a full job was rendered and you're supposed to pay, right? Yeah. Something was delivered to you. So, you know, if your plumber comes and he fixes your plumbing for you there, and you find that it's still leaking a week later, I'm pretty sure you would have paid him in full. And then when he comes back to rectify the leak, he's going to charge you again for coming back. So, and a great analogy I love to use as well is that when it comes to design, especially, you know, people don't want to pay by the hour, right? So oftentimes people go for a project-based price. So there's this flat fee and you agree to the fee for the entire project. But now you have to manage, when does this project end?
Right.
You know? So now you have to put a cap. How many revisions do I get? How much this, that, and the other? Because if you were to pay for a time slot of a day, or this project is a week, so you're going to pay for a slot, people tend to feel uncomfortable by that. They just want to pay for this deliverable. But then because people love to see more reiterations, we have to put a limit. And then so easily a lot of scope creep tends to happen. Well, I need more revisions because I'm not quite satisfied. Okay, well then more revisions or more drafts or more concepts, that means there's more money. And creatives especially tend to struggle a lot. We get into the boundaries here with, you know, having that difficult conversation. And even when they do remind them, hey, this is the terms of the agreement, this is what the package entails, the client gets very irate. And it's like really amazing to me why people feel very entitled to want to see more, and they won't dare do that in another profession. Like, you go to KFC, you get your 9 pieces of chicken. You can't say, well, I didn't really like how the chicken tastes today, you know, so can I get another 9 pieces, or can I get 2 more pieces?
This chicken is not as crispy as this one, so yeah.
Right. That's another example I was going to use. So you feel like you want more for whatever reason. You can't walk back up to the cashier and be like, well, this one wasn't so good, you know, it wasn't to my preference, right? Because this is more preference thing. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with the piece of chicken. It's just a preference. You can't go to them and tell them, well, I want an extra piece of chicken because I feel like I should have it.
So this happens to therapists as well. And I think so many things here, right? So this brings us back to emphasize the importance of having your internal boundaries strong enough before you try to set up boundaries in relationships. And that's about mindset, because people will always behave badly and they will continue to misunderstand and undervalue what we have to offer, because we give in, you know, very easily to the bad behavior. We allow it. We offer discounts when we shouldn't. We undercharge for our prices. We have such a high tolerance for the nonsense. And if we would focus on growing our tolerance for the discomfort and those difficult conversations, that's how we start teaching people to actually treat us better, right? So just to draw like a very brass tacks analogy, when I used to lecture, all of those students would bounce in class at least 15 minutes late. I'm, you know, very bold-faced, and this is adult people who own kindergartens, you know, not spring chickens.
Right.
And they actually told me, well, everybody else gives us a 15-minute grace period, so you have to as well. And I came to class one day and I worked out, so if we start class 15 minutes late every time, this is how many hours of lecturing I need to cut off, which includes all of the explanations to you guys and all of the walking through exam papers. So we could do that and you can fail the exam or we can start on time. Mm. And even if I had one student, I'd start on time. And very quickly, everybody just started coming on time.
Ooh.
And I was much younger and I learned the hard way. Nobody is going to respect the profession or the skill or my offering until I start treating the skill that I offer with the same dignity I think they should treat me with.
Right. You have
and
to position.
Every time
essentially, what you're saying
exactly.
is like you have to position the value.
Exactly. I love the business terms. Yes. I'm just a therapist.
Sorry, I can't help it.
And, you know, we don't position it right when we give in. And we tolerate and we have these long conversations on the phone where we over explain, well, you know, this and that. No. And, you know, creatives, we have so much empathy.
And I can relate because I just thought I get so excited and I started talking. I was like, wait, all of that is value?
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
No, it's value. Not and not just that, you just realize, wait, that's my product right there. It might seem like it's just talking, but it's my product. Me just telling you, hey, have you tried X? That's strategy.
Your words are business expertise. And when you just say a sentence,
that's what I'm saying.
That's years and years of training and qualifications and experience behind it. So we're not all talking. So even having a conversation that's too long where we have to convince a client that we're valuable, that's your time and expertise and it's leaking out of you, which is exhausting. And it's so important to protect our energy as empaths, as businesswomen, as creatives, because we bring that energy to our work. Our work, you know, is a reflection of our deepest self, which is why I think we feel so bad. And we take it as a personal rejection, or they didn't like this, so it means something about me. And let me just try to show them how valuable it is again, because maybe this time they will understand.
Oh, yes.
And it never works. It never works.
So fun fact, like everything she's saying is like describing me, like I have a hard time holding back my words once I get into something I'm passionate about.
Yes.
Right. And it's like, as she said, like, it's so like you become so wordy or let me over explain. Over explaining it's insane. And another fun fact is that she's probably saying these things because I know, I think it was episode 45. I shared with you guys, I'm an INFJ and what that means and the Myers-Briggs test, which I'd encourage you guys to go read up on and the different profiles and what an INFJ is or an INFP, because I made reference to an INFP in that episode. I will remember to link to the test in the show notes. So you guys can go and take your own test, because I actually asked a friend 2 nights ago. It's something he said just made me go, have you ever taken a Myers-Briggs test? I started to notice some qualities and good qualities.
Yeah.
And he was like, no. And when he took it immediately and is like, damn, that is scarily accurate. One.
So unfortunate.
And he said he feels exposed. And I was like, yeah, I have another friend who is an INFP. And he said the same thing when he took it. He felt exposed. So it's so funny how even the responses were similar between the two personality types. And Neola is also an INFJ. So you have two INFJs on the podcast. So I hope some things are starting to make sense. It's
two
weird.
rare personality types.
And I
Me
find
too.
it so strange that they say it's only 1% because I seem to know a lot of INFJs. So is it that we just
Not
find
me,
each
no.
other?
We just kind of found each other. You know, maybe we should start, you know, this society of INFJs. We could swap all our stories because I don't know any other actually besides you.
Yeah, I know a few. Someone listened to my episode and he said he's an INFJ and he's like, that's probably why we get along so well. And my friend who is an INFP was like, but they say it's only 1%, but it seems to be a lot of you.
He's just lucky enough to be in this circle, you know, so it might seem to him as if, yeah.
It's exactly. So anyway, that's just so funny. So back to your point, like, it's not just talking, it's our years of experience. And that's actually very correct because I see people like guys, I watch you all on social media struggle with issues that I know I have the solution to, but I can't help you unless you allow me to help you. You know, you go around and around in a circle for 2-3 years saying you need clarity, but I'm here telling you, hey, I have the solution. Come do an intensive with me. Like, you have to give me permission because what I have to offer is going to save you all of this time going around in a circle. So yeah. So let's reel it back into what you were saying about having boundaries and over-explaining. I wanted to actually highlight that you spoke about internal and external boundaries. Now, that's not something that you hear day to day. You just hear, you need to have boundaries, you need to have boundaries, boundaries. And we have all these memes all over social media, boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. And the first time I heard internal boundaries from you, I was like, internal boundaries? So maybe, maybe there are other people listening who are now mind blown. But even without explaining it, it makes sense. Like, oh, there's internal, there's external. I'll allow you now to elaborate on that.
The boundaries, they're very much, you know, they're having a moment, you know. But boundaries have been a backbone of healthy relationships in psychology forever. So the idea, I think, especially with the memes, now I love the memes. I actually don't remember what life was like before memes. Not to knock them because I love them and they give me life. But I think the idea that we have about boundaries is it's all about no, no, no. And, you know, one of the persons who signed up for my boundaries coaching class starting on Sunday, he was so shocked to find out that the class is actually going to discuss as well, when should we say yes and open our boundaries? He thought we were just going to be closing boundaries, telling people no. And he said, and I quote, I thought this was going to be a class that would teach me how to cuss out people. And I said, no. There are times when we have to actually open our boundaries. So that's the first thing. Boundaries aren't about saying no. It's all about what would allow me to say yes. And internal boundaries are the ideas that we hold about ourselves, how we view things like my space, my time, my money, my skin. What do I think about sleeping? Do I deserve to rest? Do I have to be productive 24/7? And I like to say boundaries in terms of I have a right. So some of my internal boundaries sound like I have a right to eat lunch at lunchtime. I have a right to state my prices firmly and stick to that. I have a right to protect my personal
space. That's a quotable.
Oh, let's have it. I don't remember what I said. What did I say?
You said I have a right to state my prices firmly, something, something. When I re-listen, I'll pull that. Yeah.
And then if we even took that further to sound very empowering, I deserve this price. I deserve to raise my price because for the past 10 months, I've poured everything into my business, absorbed all the extra costs for overhead, and now I deserve this raise, so I'm going to raise my price. and I'm not going to apologize for it. Now, we don't run into the thing carrying the torch, the Olympic torch, you know. We actually really feel like shit at first.
Mm-hmm. We actually have to convince ourselves, right? So we consume all of these memes to build us up. I have a right. Like, you're first convincing yourself before you go out into the world and you tell people.
And you know, you'd think you're going to go in there like a tiger roaring, but really it's like a pussycat tiptoeing into the room. And that's okay. You have to learn, we have to learn, I have to learn to understand and accept and tolerate. This is going to be really uncomfortable at first. Those conversations might not feel nice, but we can do great things that feel like shit for us. For example, going to the gym. I don't have to feel good about something that's wonderful to do the wonderful thing. I can feel like shit and do it anyway. And that's what I mean by internal boundaries. It's holding yourself to these high standards that you don't even drop for your own self, because I value myself so much. I'm not even dropping the standard for me.
Right.
So I'm not going to jump in and say, well, I'll give you this for 300 when it's really 450. Because I want to keep that promise to myself.
That sounds so familiar. Because I've done that so many times. And we find ways to justify, like, why do we find reasons to justify that as opposed to finding reasons to just stick to the price that you set? Because you didn't come up with this figure arbitrary, out of thin air, right? So my thing is, it's like, why don't we remember how we came up with that price? Now, if you came up with your prices out of thin air, then you need to have a conversation with a coach, a strategist, and fix it and price accordingly, right? But once you know you've went through some pricing strategy, then you need to stick to this strategy because it was set there for a purpose. It serves a clear purpose. There's a why behind it. And exactly. I think we need to remember the why behind how we arrived at these prices, because then it would really stick. That what's the why for the discount? Why?
We want to be nice. We have some very strange ideas around being nice. And when you dig much deeper into it, the behaviors that make us appear nice, they really enabling behaviors. They're behaviors that are rooted in fear, insecurity.
Fair.
Well, they're not going to like me. No, but I'll never get clients again. My business is going to fail. They'll find out, you know, I'm too aggressive. I sound like a bitch. But are you really being nice, or are you
doing a disservice
on yourself?
Because actually, if we were to reevaluate the way we define nice, actually it's not nice when you are discounting yourself, because by extension you are discounting the other person from really getting the full value. Because let's be honest, when we discount, we don't really enjoy it. We don't enjoy it. We don't feel good. We have resentment, and we don't light up. And if you're not lighting yourself up when you land that client, then you are not even really showing up for that client or that customer to your full potential. Like, what is the incentive? Hey, you have come to the end of this podcast episode. This is part one. So if you want to go catch part two, then click on over to go listen to part two.